Hey, everybody. Is it recording? We're recording. Welcome, welcome. Glad to see everybody. Let's see. We've got Ed. This is your first call, is it not, Ed?
It is.
Awesome. Well, glad to have you. What we usually do is just a brief, you know, minute and a half introduction. Tell us who you are. Tell us why you're in the program, what you're hoping to get out of it. And others, as we'll just wait a second here. A couple of people are still joining, and as others join, when people know kind of what it is that you're looking for, they can help you, and you'll learn as other people ask questions what they're going to be looking for and needing, and you'll be able to figure out in ways in which you can also help them. So, Ed, tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm the owner and operator of an educational center. I started in 2006. We offer supplementary education to students from grade 4 through grade 12. And by that, I mean we offer enrichment for students that are already in a private school or public school. Help them improve their grades or just improve their understanding of academic subjects. And also a big component of our services are test prep. So for the students improve SAT or ACT scores. What I am interested in getting out of this program, very broadly, I know I have some blind spots, and this is an avenue to uncover them. I think one area is in getting my team aligned so that we act as a team and are more effective in moving in the direction that'll achieve the goals or the mission of our organization.
Awesome. Well, glad to have you. Those are definitely things we like to talk about and help people out with. So make sure you take advantage of this opportunity to ask the questions you need to ask. Did you get access to the program, the videos and stuff? Were you able to at least see the program?
I have not poked around in there, to be perfectly honest. Totally. And I'll review your emails. I was just thinking about that today. I saw all those modules that you laid out.
Awesome.
We spoke, but have not investigated that. Plan to be soon.
No problem. Okay. So thank you. Welcome, Ed. Glad you're here. Feel free to ask any questions you want, or you can be a listening member, whatever you feel like today. Who has anything? I don't think I got, I was on calls right before this. Let me just check to confirm. I do have Clay. Okay, I'm missing all these emails. I don't know what happened to me. Sorry about that. Okay, Stephanie was the one who sent the first email. So Stephanie, why don't you just review a little bit of the email for the team, and love the cat, by the way. What's the cat's name? Oh, I think you might be muted. Actually, you don't look muted, but I couldn't hear you. Is anybody else able to hear, or am I the only one? Still nothing.
Testing.
There we go.
Hey, okay. All right. Ironically, I'm a digital marketer and I, have problems with digital things. So hi everyone. I'm transitioning into a role from the head of marketing into a head of people strategy and culture, and just kind of overarching, almost like a chief of staff position is the way I like to think about it. And I have some new direct reports, and I think there's people within layers beneath the top layer that are also dealing with similar things in this reorganization that we're doing, where there's instances of people being peers for so long. And particularly, I have a new direct report who, for a long time, we were peers, although it was very ambiguous about where authority lied, but it was really, we were peers. There was a little bit of friction in the beginning. And since then, there's been water under the bridge. We're totally fine. And she actually requested that she report to me as opposed to our CEO. So in that big honor, I'm also, I have this anxiety around, I'm still unprogramming the walking on eggshells, tiptoe, don't want to step on anyone's toes, trying to avoid that friction and that conflict that we kind of started off in. That's kind of the seed that bore, that kind of grew what we are today. So there's still a lot of like uneasiness that I have. And I think it's really psychologically me, because obviously she requested to actually directly report to me, and I'm having trouble with stepping into that new identity as her leader, or at this new level, next level of leadership, without feeling, with fully owning that authority in a way that is going to set her up for success, set the team up for success, but also I'm doing this in a way where I'm not hesitant. I feel hesitant, even though factually it's there now. And I just have a hard time owning it and just truly, I guess, asserting the authority. Yeah.
So I totally appreciate that. That transition can be a difficult one. And I understand that. And I think it can be especially difficult for someone who has your abilities. So as we talked last week, you know, you are more attuned to the emotional system than the average bear. Mm-hmm. And as you recall, the emotional system, when you're super attuned to it, can feel like an overwhelming ocean. It's just sort of like, oh, there's all this, you know, different potentials, and I have to anticipate all that. And you can kind of see the 10 moves of chess out, and all of that is like a gift, but also that curse where you have to be able to kind of go, okay, That doesn't matter. I've got to get kind of succinct and clear in my own mind about what is and what isn't, and what I have to worry about and what I don't. So just mm-hmm. general observation about the change that you're in. The question comes in the abstract, and I can do abstract things, and I'm happy to, but I would love to, if there's a way. Do you have a really specific example of a moment where you felt like you pulled a punch, or you didn't quite give clear direction, or you were kind of mm-hmm. like, I didn't want to step on toes, so I'm not going to say that? Or do you have anything yet? Or is it more like you're afraid it's going to happen?
Oh man, I'm such an abstract. So thanks for calling me out on that.
I can do abstract, but I do better when I have something really concrete, because I'll give you a really targeted piece of feedback.
Yeah. One example is my goal is to redesign the way that we communicate with each other and how we make decisions with each other. And part of that is setting really clear expectations about what our business objectives are as a whole. Like Ed mentioned, oh, how do I get my team aligned moving toward the mission of the company? I feel like we have a little bit of an identity crisis as a company, where we're still trying to really solidify what that is. And so what that means is everybody's kind of all over the place. So when it comes to prioritization of things such as concretely a development web task, should we invest our money in developing this, you know, loyalty program, or should we spend our money developing this user experience on a certain element of our site that's going to help convert more orders? So it's like, we have these conflicting priorities, or they all help the greater good. But I think what happens is people get attached. They attach their identity to a project, and then it's this her project versus his project. It's not like, hey, let's collectively decide as a unit where these projects fall within our prioritization and how they help contribute to the greater goal. And I think one thing is having more clear, like, decision-making processes, but and empowering people to make these decisions. And then at the end of the day, I have final veto power over, you know, maybe Shelby might think that this is the project we should do. Steph might think this is the project we should do. And at the end of, and they're very warranted, but at the end of the day, I've got to make a final decision, or I have to veto whatever decision was made. And I have a hard time doing that.
Yeah. So what you're saying is when you're going to say to somebody, no, we're not going to do that, we're going to do this instead, your fear is that they're going to hear it as you're less important than this other person.
Yeah, I think so.
Because they're attached to the project personally. You're not just agnostically moving workflow around. You're actually saying, you're afraid you're saying, people hear it as I'm less important than that person, even though you're just talking about a project. Am I hearing that right?
That's part of it. Yeah, that's very much part of it. And also maybe part of my fear that I'm uncovering, sorry, as I'm saying this to you, is that, you know, what if my decision actually isn't what's best? So I think that's something separate. So we can stick to the first one.
Two different issues. Okay, good. So super helpful, and appreciate you sharing that kind of as openly as you have. I'm going to just flag for you briefly, and everybody on the call, anytime you're trying to, I'll just say workshop a prioritization, like how do we decide what goes first, what goes last, all that stuff. There are two very helpful, I'm going to share my screen here. Where did it run off to? There it is. Here's the first one that I'm going to suggest. It's video 9 of module 5 about making smarter decisions faster. So you can learn more about that. I'm going to give you right now a very brief overview of one of the tools in that video. And it can also help depersonalize prioritization, right? So it depends on if you have like multiple people or just one person or whatever. But the way you would run this is called the Easy Impact Matrix. Have you seen it before? Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, I feel like a Steve Covey book or something.
it's from one of those old time leadership gurus, which I don't know the sources, but I actually think they're super helpful for emotional process. So here's why they can be useful. And what you do is you simply sit down and you have whoever the group is, or if it's you and another person, you just say, I want you to write down on post-it notes all the big things that we know need to change, happen, or occur in the next amount of time, who knows how long, right? What are the big things that we have to do? And then what you do is you put on a whiteboard if you can, or you do it, if you're doing it remotely, you can do it remotely, but you basically build this little matrix and you go, what of those things, just plot them where you think they are. And each person gets to kind of plot them where they think they are. And you're like, well, I think this is super easy to do. It has really high impact. So it goes in that quadrant one, which is we're going to act. This one is not easy to do, but it's really high impact. I think it goes in the plan. This one's super easy to do, but it doesn't really have that big of an impact. It goes here. And this one has no impact and it's really hard. Why do we even have it? Right? So that's, you can kind of populate things that way. And again, all you're doing is you're using this as a tool to have a conversation that is impersonal. You're depersonalizing, you're putting it outside oneself. You're writing the project on a piece of paper and you're locating those pieces of paper and you're having dialogue about what you all think about where things should live. And then you translate that into a sequential list so that you know, like, okay, if we know that these three things are in the act quadrant, which one should happen first, second, third? And then we know that we're going to go to plan. When should that happen? And then we're going to go to consider, and that's going to be the last step. And then, by the way, these we can erase if there are anything. Right? Maybe there's nothing that shows up in the ignore box, but that is a technique. And there are dozens of ways to do this. This is just one that occurred to me as you were talking, that you can use to get alignment, prioritization, and to depersonalize so that people go, oh, okay, we're having a different kind of conversation here. Mm-hmm. And then you as the leader, when there's disagreement, your job is to adjudicate and to say, okay, you think it's this, you think it's that, I'm going to say it's this, I'm using an executive decision, done. And we're moving on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're saying this, I think we're all agreed it's here. And so that's a particular way that I would explore. So let me pause there and see, is any of that getting at what you think you're asking, or you think I'm missing what you're asking?
Yeah, as you did that, it really just gave me a little bit of validation because I sat down with my team and did that exact exercise.
Literally.
But it wasn't with this new person and this new wing of the team. So my team's digital marketing, the other team is web and e-commerce, which, hello, they go hand in hand, but we've been in these silos. So now it's like, hey, do that, but do it where you're incorporating both of the wings.
Yes. So, yes. Yeah. There you go. Okay. Great. Okay. Well, you didn't need coaching then.
No, I did need, I needed that. Thank you.
No, I'm very happy.
I hope that was helpful for everyone else too. So thank you.
So then just a comment for you. I think what I would like to invite you to do is start to notice. I don't need you to judge it and I don't need you to change it. So this by the way, goes for everybody. One of the most powerful ways that you can change leadership capacities, tendencies, personality traits, shadows, impingements, impairments, all the things that right get in the way of us. Like Stephanie is talking about, you know, I feel this way. I have these hesitations. I'm concerned about that. Those are things that can get in the way of leadership. But they can also be things that are super resourceful for leadership. Like you should be worried about certain things. So the first step is to have no judgment about what it is you bring to the leadership context. Maybe you're a person who brings to the leadership context, I know I'm right, everybody else is an idiot, and I know I'm in a bad space when I see everybody as a bunch of clowns. That's one kind of structured of personality type, right? Another personality type is like, I hate conflict. And so I just like to harmonize everybody all the time. And I'm always harmonizing. And then we end up with beige carpet and nobody knows where we're going. Mm-hmm. I'm an over-functioner. I tend to just do for people instead of delegating and trusting and not feeling bad about delegating because, you know, they could do that. So everybody has a different kind of leadership style that they bring. And so the most powerful thing you can do for yourself is to remove judgment about it. And the reason you have to remove judgment is that's how you'll become aware of it. Here's why. I want everybody in here to look at the back of their hand. So when you look at the back of your hand, you most likely have no real opinions about the back of your hand. You know, this is not a major source of insecurity or judgment for most people. If you have some insecurity there, look at the front of your hand. Probably even less judgment there. Like it doesn't matter. There are certain parts of us that we're neutral about. My elbow. How do I feel about my elbows? I have no feelings about my elbows. No judgment. I don't hate them. I don't love them. They just are there, right? But if you want to talk about my love handles, which of course I don't have, but if I had, I'm just kidding. If there's some part of my body that I dislike, I'm going to hide that from myself. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to see it. I want to wear a nice baggy shirt. I want to not look in the mirror. I definitely don't want a picture of me from that angle or whatever it is, right? So the things that we judge, we hide from ourselves and we try to hide from others. When you hide something from yourself and others, you lose awareness. And when awareness goes, you become unconscious in your behaviors. We all become habituated. We get habituated patterns of acting, and we don't stop long enough to notice that that's a habit and a pattern rather than a choice. So habituated unconscious patterns are a prison. They lock us in and we become unconsciously programmed to do certain things. You use the word unprogramming, Stephanie, super helpful word. So what we do in this kind of work is we say, can I become aware of my pattern? Can I disidentify enough? There's enough of a gap that I could see it. Because when you can see it, you now have choice. You now have freedom. So awareness equals freedom and choice. And what the most amazing thing is, and I've worked with lots and lots of people, is that I notice when they have awareness, they automatically make choices that serve the purpose easier. And here's why it's so critical you don't judge whatever trait or personality you have, because there's always the context in which that trait is really great, is absolutely necessary. And so because it's absolutely necessary, you don't need to judge it. You get to then choose, is this context one of those moments where that gift I have should be deployed? Or is this one of those times where I need to lay it down and pick up a different one? And what happens is when you become non-judging and aware and awake throughout your day of whatever habit or pattern you have, you will start to make better choices even without knowing you're doing it. People will start to experience you differently without you even noticing you've done it. So that was kind of for everybody. That's pattern recognition, right? So for you, Stephanie, as we come back into you specifically, you seem to have a gift that is also maybe a habit. And that gift is you're super attuned to what everybody else might be feeling. And you're really, really careful not to disrupt potentially what everybody's feeling. Does that sound close to the pattern you might have?
Yeah, it's a gift and a curse.
Yeah, sure. It's so, I call it a gift and a pattern, because the pattern is when it works against you, because it's the only thing you deploy in every not literally, but like that's what makes a pattern is I don't have mobility. I don't have the flexibility, the adaptability to know that in this situation, what's called for is I need to raise my voice and tell you to sit down, you know, because you're distracting everybody else. And that's not normally my pattern, but I need to deploy it because it's essential and called for. Mm-hmm. That is how, so that the pattern is when it's just repeated all the time. Mm-hmm. And you're doing it without even know you're doing it. Mm-hmm. That's when it becomes a habituated program.
Yeah.
So did I capture what you would that be an accurate description, or did I misstate what your tendency or your gift?
Yeah,
is?
It's a total tendency. I'm a recovering people pleaser. And you know, what are they gonna think? How are they gonna feel? And never mind without even realizing it. And you're right, until I got that awareness, that's when I started to be able to make choices and, you know, hold better boundaries and all that. But
for years,
yeah, that was my mode of operation. Yeah.
Great. So the great thing about being a people pleaser is it'll never leave you.
Damn it.
not damn it. This is shadow work. So for everybody listening, when you work on shadow, Carl Jung said the shadow, 90% of the shadow is pure gold when it becomes something you're aware of. So the most important thing is to not demonize, hate, demote, invalidate, ignore, suppress the shadow. Once you do that, it goes into the back alleys and then it wreaks havoc. So for all of us, whatever our thing is, the more we are conscious of it, the more we make it our companion, and the more we say, you're a valid part of me. You are a necessary, valid part of me. But you're a little bit like my pet, my dog. I'm going to be the boss of you. You're not going to be the boss of me. I love you. You're necessary. I need you. But I'm going to guide you. I'm going to keep you on a leash, and I'm going to tell you where to go and where not to go. I'm going to give you boundaries, rules, limitations. But I'm not going to hate you, despise you, repress you, none of that. I'm going to welcome you. So this is like inner work where for the rest of your life, a part of you will always have that and you can be grateful for it. Okay. And so the way that it stays beautiful is you just start noticing it and you have a sense of humor about it with yourself. No judgment. You just go, oh, look at that. I am in this moment as I'm talking, I'm wondering what everybody's thinking of me. I'm wondering if maybe I'm talking too much. I'm wondering if maybe I said something in a way that hurt that person. And now look at this. Now I'm telling everybody that I didn't mean, I'm doing a lot of pre-qualifying. Why am I this is really interesting. I'm pre-qualifying everything I'm saying. That's probably because I'm afraid of how people will react. You don't have to change any of it. Just become masterful at observing it. Okay, so I'm going to stop there. And scene. Stephanie, comments or questions?
That's a great way to look at it, as your pet and it's on a leash and it's not going to make any decisions for you, but it's going to, you're still going to love it and, you know, within certain bounds. Yeah.
And sometimes you want to unleash that pet. You need a protective guard dog. Go for it. You need a cuddler. You need someone to cuddle with. Go for it. Whatever the thing is, whatever the thing that the pet serves, it's good. That's the point. Anybody else want to interact with what I was just talking about? Did I just go over anybody's head and you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. This is too deep for me. Or are you like, I have questions about my specific stuff.
Well, you're speaking my language, Shane. So thank you for, I know it gets a little ethereal, but I totally, that stuff I feel sets you free. So okay, I'm with it.
Outstanding. Well, great question. Okay, who would like to go next? I think let me check my email. There may be somebody. Clay, are you on? Where is Clay? Is he on? I didn't see Clay. Oh, there he is. Clay, you had a question.
Hello.
There he is. All right. Clay, fire away. Welcome.
Yeah, so mine was a question about, you know, addressing, you know, family members. We're a family owned operated business, and or both of our businesses are. And one's, and I'm going to say this because maybe it's relevant, maybe it's not. But one is a employer of about 500 people, and the other is an employer of about 50 people. You know, the employer of 500 spread out all over the state, and then the one with 50 is in one location. Anyway, the question is, one of my, and I'm going to be more personal because that's what you like to do, Shane, right?
I prefer, yeah, the more gory details, the better. It's way more interesting and helpful.
Right. So one of my cousins on the larger company side, she's on our executive board, and so is her father, and she calls her father by his name. Uh-huh. My other cousin that sits on our executive board at the smaller company, and so does her father, calls her father dad, even in the work setting. Mm-hmm. So in my personal experience with this, and I don't know, JD could speak to, I don't remember when I was working for JD. I wasn't really working with my dad at the time, so I don't even remember what I addressed him as. But I remember hearing my cousin addressing her dad by his given name. And mm-hmm. I thought, okay, that makes sense. I can easily call my dad by his name at work and call him dad, you know, outside of work. And so that's what I did until I heard my other cousin started calling her dad in the workplace. And so I talked to my dad about it, and you know, I was like, you know, what do you prefer? And he's like, I understand why you started calling me by my name. He's like, but I'm your father, I'm your dad. I'd rather you call me dad inside and outside of work. So I kind of started testing that out. And why I bring it up, and me and Megan and JD have already talked about this. And JD brought it up to me. He said, Clay, I've noticed you started calling Cece by dad. I was, you know, wanting to know what changed, why that changed, and just bring it to your awareness in case you weren't aware. Because that's one big thing that me and Megan and JD are trying to work on is being open, honest with each other, holding each other accountable respectfully, or just making each other aware of what we are or aren't doing or how we've changed. So I kind of want a feedback more kind of globally, and I like to hear your feedback and any other's feedback, even if you haven't, you know, been a part of that type of environment, how you'd feel.
I've worked with family businesses, so they are different. I appreciate you bringing it up. Let me ask JD a question. JD, what is it about, are you there, JD? I just want to make sure you're present with us. Yeah. Yep. Okay, cool. What is the impact you notice? Like, because you're not a family member in the business, you observe the implications usually of how the family's operating and the impact it has on the business. So first, let me just understand, what's your observation of the impact of that dynamic? Who's calling who what? Is there an impact?
I didn't really feel internally that there was a big impact for internal conversations and things of that nature. We all know family's family and who's related to who and all of those things. And talking with other employees, they didn't see any issues with it. The one part that kind of, I guess, made me think is any outside or external interactions. Like if we end up in a business meeting and they would turn and say, hey, dad, the people across the table might not completely understand the whole family dynamics of the business and things of that nature. The only other thing that I remember reading through a Dave Ramsey book on and how he kind of ran his company was, if his son would turn to him and say, hey, dad, what about this decision? Or I don't agree with this, dad. Then they're kind of pulling a family card on it, as how they saw it, and saying, well, hey, dad, it's this instead of it being addressed. And that's how it could be perceived by the other employee or by the external people of pulling a family card per se versus just dealing straight with business.
Great observation.
Yeah.
So here's what I'd say. I think that is a potential risk, right? But a lot of what I would say matters more is how you function as an organization. So if, let's say, Clay, which I'm certain this is not you, I don't get this impression of you, there are undoubtedly, and I've worked with family businesses where the son feels entitled, isn't terribly skilled at his job, got overpromoted, has an inflated title. Everybody knows it's nepotism, and everybody's whispering about it. And then they all roll their eyes whenever you walk in the room because they know you're not credible and you don't know what you're doing. Then the word dad is going to ring super annoying for most people because they're just going to be like, it's a reminder every time that you have no business being in that role. And everybody else is frustrated for it. If you, on the other hand, have worked your way up through the ranks, learned hard lessons, didn't get handed out any favors because of your last name, and you have earned credibility and trust in the system, and you call dad, dad, it just feels like an honest moment. And it doesn't seem like a manipulation. So I do appreciate Dave Ramsey's understanding, and I can appreciate how he might want to have a hard line in the sand to prevent that. I just think that it's more dynamic than that. And so I would say, you know, an honest conversation, JD, with Clay and maybe Megan, where you guys get honest about, Clay, do you have the credibility to be at the level you're at? Is that really where you are? Because that is a service to Clay and the whole organization. You know, I got hired into an organization at what was called a chief leadership officer. And I was college buddies with the CEO who hired me. And I had no experience in real estate development, but I had a lot of experience in leading people and teams and understanding leadership development. So my role wasn't real estate, it was leadership development, but I had no real exposure to the business. And so what I didn't know is when I got hired into that role, three things happened. One, they didn't post the position and interview anybody else. It was just given to me because the CEO knew me and trusted me and we were friends. So that's point one. Point two, I was his good buddy. I was his college buddy. And point three, I had no known experience in the industry. So right away, I've got this title that says chief leadership officer, and everybody rolls their eyes. It took me years to develop the credibility because nobody knew me. And so they're like, oh, nepotism. Just a good buddy who got a big inflated title. And I didn't have direct reports. I was like overseeing all kinds. I was like a floater role. It was even worse. So somebody came to be honest and just said, Shane, I want you to know, if I were in your shoes, I want to know this. You have no credibility right now. Every word you say, nobody trusts. And here are the reasons why. Your friend didn't do you any favors. So we have to design a strategy to start to try to get the three strikes against you back, because he had worked with me enough to know, he's like, look, you're really good at what you do, but no one's going to see you as valid. So that was a wonderful, honest conversation that was shocking to me. I didn't understand any of that at the time. So that'd be my feedback right there, is having no real knowledge of what's going on in the business or how you're perceived. The first question I would have as a family member is like, how am I really perceived? I mean, just pull no punches. Am I really perceived this way? Do I need to work on anything? Is there some part of what I'm doing showing up that just isn't being received well, or I don't seem credible? I would be asking those questions, and I'd have that really honest, candid observation from your peers. And I would say preferably non-family members. So JD would be a really credible person to say, and you don't have to do it on this call, JD. I'm just saying, you know, that would be a conversation I recommend you guys have. And then I think it's fine for if you've established, no, Clay's the real deal, people really trust him, respect him, his title is deserved, I would support that. And I think everybody agrees, then dad is fine. And if Clay is not, manipulating and pulling little strings because he's the son, then totally fine to call dad, because people will feel that. If he's got that underlying credibility, they'll be okay. Hopefully that wasn't too long. Did that answer the question, Clay?
Yes, somewhat. I mean, and you know, to JD's kind of point, that was kind of where I had maybe drawn the line a little bit, was internally versus externally. I know my cousin that calls her dad, she calls her dad, and she's a salesperson. And so she's in there trying to close a deal, and she calls him dad. But then, you know, my other cousin, she calls her dad by his name, you know, every time. I can't speak to outside. Megan, I see you unmuted. You could speak to it because I'm talking about you.
I'm the cousin that calls my dad Chuck. I call him by his name.
Wait, Megan, you call him dad?
No, I do not. I call him by his given name. And I always have, even growing up in my grandfather's pharmacy when I worked for him outside of this company, I called him Chuck and I referred to him as Chuck. That's how I functioned.
Okay, cool. And that works beautifully for you and your dad. Yeah. I'm sorry, you and Chuck.
Correct. And nobody has any doubt about, not everybody knows who my dad is, right? Not everybody knows that. Also, I didn't want to be seen as, yes, pulling on that string at all. I just wanted everything, you know, kind of cut and dry here. And also no gray lines. Like, they don't feel like they can't go to Chuck if they have a problem with me, or if they can't, you know. I just wanted it pretty professional, I guess, is my take on that.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, I pretty much just wanted to hear perspectives of both sides, you know, because I've now seen both sides and I've done both sides. And so I just, you know, wondering what others, you know, perspective is on it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a hard line on it. That's the main thing. I have a highly contextual investigate, understand. First, all those underlying things. Once those underlying things have been vetted and understood, the name becomes less important.
And two, because I have a little background here, I will say, like, about three and a half years ago, Clay, we came to heads on something. You pulled the dad card and I called you out on it, but not everyone's going to do that. And I, you know, but that's different. So that's the only thing there that outlined. And I think that would be outside the board meeting. I think the board meeting is totally fine, but just, it's up to you guys, right?
Well, and Megan, I think this is about then you and Clay and anybody else having direct, honest conversations about how you're experiencing each other, you know, as family members too. It's not just JD as a non-family member, it's you two as family members and you feeling a certain way about how another family member is navigating the family system within the business. And so it's important for you to express the impact it's having on you. But I don't know that it's fair for you to say that he did it wrong either. You know, it's fair for you to say what he did had an impact on you. And so when you use the name dad in this context, the effect it had on me is that it felt to me like you were using that as authority. And so that caused me to feel disappointed or frustrated or stressed or whatever. That's the way that conversation, maybe you had it that way, but that's how I would recommend that conversation happen, is that it's still super respectful and not trying to accuse anybody and not trying to lay claim to the higher ground of knowing what the right answer is, but just, we're in a family and family's not easy. And it's, you know, we are going to have these experiences. So you guys generally, by the way, as family businesses go, I'm super pleased with how you guys generally handle stuff. And I learned that mostly from JD when he was in the first round of the program. Awesome. Like, you guys have avoided a lot of the key mistakes that I see get made in family businesses. So congratulations to your fathers who have created that culture, and congratulations to you guys who have propagated it. It's going to make you a lot more successful.
All right. Thanks, Shane.
Yeah, you bet. Okay. Who's up next? Who else has a question? Issue. You're all hiding behind these anonymous names.
If nobody else is going, I had a follow-up from last week. I had posed, is that all right to go? Anybody else have?
Yeah.
All right. Kind of posed that question about just regrouping with my team on their current list of, you know, daily, weekly, monthly, pre-COVID, during COVID, and current state COVID, and just reallocating those things. So I did go back through module 4, which you had recommended. And I'd already watched that before and gone through that. But in all, I love utility players on my team. So this is how we got to where we are, I think, right now. So we can pivot when we need to, as well as work through items like with a whole picture input concerning outcomes instead of tunnel vision. I think it works well as a team. The downfall is that when we do pivot and reallocate to get through, which is what happened during COVID, if we don't make a conscious effort to reevaluate, I'm going to have some team members burn out because they are left with things that maybe shouldn't remain on their plate. So that's what I'm trying to look at right now. So during the videos, you know, I looked at the making sure focusing on the how of the operations of the current state versus the previous state. And I just need to look at the structure to support the strategy that we have right now. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah. So is there, you have a question in there, or just, you're just giving me a follow-up?
So in going, my next steps are going to be is, and I want to make sure that this kind of flows with kind of where you would recommend or anybody else has any input, having my team compile a list of their current daily, weekly, monthly, and quarterly items to compare versus what we had outlined previously as step one. And then we'll use a RACI chart to identify those that need to be reassessed or restructured, and either shift them, revamp them, reallocate them to another person or department, and then give them some weight. So that's kind of my next step, unless you have any other advice there.
That sounds like the right next step to me. I think without having a little more line of sight, that broadly speaking, that's exactly what I would suggest you do next. It sounds like you're staging it in the right way, sequencing it in the right way. And that is the next series of conversations to have for sure. So my short answer is yes. Anybody else want to weigh in on that? Anybody else have opinions or thoughts on what Megan's bringing up? Okay, I'll trust that.
Shane, this is Sarah. Yeah. I'll jump in here.
Fire it away.
I can really relate to the overload of work kind of thing. And just I'm curious, how has that been acknowledged and recognized so far? And, you know, what are you doing to make sure that the team understands that you're working on changing that?
What do you mean, how has it been acknowledged? How did I get to where I'm reassessing this?
Yes.
Oh, I can just, there are certain team members of mine, and I came into this saying, you know, I'm not sure whether it's their title or what, like there's something going on, and there's a couple members here that I'm struggling with that I didn't previously, and kind of working through some of these modules, it appears that maybe some of these people ended up with some of these higher workloads, and they weren't even telling me about some of the stuff they were taking on, and they're getting mm-hmm. close to burnout. So needing to regroup and reassess and reevaluate that, or just let it keep going. So I could just see the frustration in them. And through conversations, I've come to determine that, oh, I'm also doing this. Oh, I'm also doing this for XYZ. And oh, I'm doing this on Friday afternoon. I'm like, okay, hold on a second. So that's kind of where that came from. Does that answer your question?
Kind of. I guess it's a follow-up to that is that you've obviously seen it. So do those team members who you feel are approaching burnout, have you approached them specifically and had conversations with them about what are they doing and why are they feeling that they need to take on all that extra stuff?
Yeah, I have. I have weekly sync ups with each of my managers. And sometimes they're short. I mean, they're only allocated 30 minutes. And during those sync ups, we reprioritize what's on their plate. And in those conversations that, you know, they're supposed to let me know if they have too many conflicting priorities that they don't think they can accomplish so that we can regroup on those. And that's been a very good maintenance thing for us. And so these two or three individuals ended up with a lot of high priority items. And I could just tell that this wasn't getting any better, even though they were telling me the words, okay.
Yeah. I'm finding the same thing is that when you approach somebody who has a tendency to take on those extra tasks, that even though you pull work away from them, they still take on extra tasks. And so as much as I'm trying to alleviate, I find myself either end up with removing too much work from them, or if I remove work, they go back and they take on more. And so it's this constant turn that even though we're trying to approach it and fix it, it continues.
Well, I use that quadrant. Shane kind of pulled that quadrant, and I use that actually with these couple individuals, and I had them track for a couple of weeks in that quadrant, which ones were, you know, which quadrant are they working in? Quadrant one, everything's on fire, versus the proactive quadrant, and also which things in those quadrants that they listed out, could they have delegated back out? You know, every, and so we went through those every week, and I would say 60% of what they were had, they could either have had somebody do or shown them how to do, or it didn't belong to them. And they just weren't getting the proactive stuff done. So that was the first step probably a couple of months ago, was having them evaluate and actually list everything out so they could see it, because I could hear it.
That's an interesting idea. I like that.
The other that related to that, the other way that I work with, kind of, this happens more often with business owners, actually had Ed do this exercise. And Ed, I don't know if you got a chance to do any of it, but when you had your first call with me, the exercise is effectively your job has a certain kind of, we'll call it hourly rate. And you were hired to do a certain role. So if let's say you're a CEO, your hourly rate is like $10,000 an hour, potentially, depending on the business. But let's imagine it's $10,000 an hour. And then there are jobs that are $1,000 an hour jobs, and there are jobs that are $500 an hour jobs, and there are jobs that are $20 an hour jobs and $10 an hour jobs. Like there are all kinds of different jobs. And so very often with owners of small businesses, I notice that they're doing much of their day, they're doing $20, $30, $40, $50 an hour work. And so what I do is I have them list out, what are all those things you're really doing? But just note for me what you think the hourly rate might be for somebody, if you had to hire somebody to do that. And they're like, oh my gosh, I'm spending all my time doing $50 an hour work and I make $400 an hour, or whatever the amount is that they think they are. And so then my guidance to them is always, and this is true when I'm managing people too, is you should only be doing $400 an hour work, whatever your level is. So rough out what you think that level is, and you tell them that's the work you should be doing. So if you're doing anything that isn't that hourly rate, somebody else needs to be doing, even if they don't do it as well. So the other thing that I tell people who have a hard time with letting go of things is I remind them that 90% is still an A. Remember those two things. You're hired to do this level hourly work, and 90% is still an A. And that means that if somebody can do it for you, but they're going to do it at 90%, you would have done it 100%, or they're going to do it fast, you're going to do it faster than they're going to do it. 90% is still an A. As long as they're hitting that base threshold, keep moving. And the reason that's so important is we've hired you and pay you at this rate because there are certain things only you can do that the people below you can't. And we need you focused there to optimize the salary we're actually giving you. So sometimes translating it to money can help. It doesn't work for everybody, but sometimes that's the helpful way to awaken people to their value. It's another way of saying you are punching below your weight and you're hurting the organization when you do it. Sometimes that's the thing. Sometimes they just feel like, well, I'm just so helpful and I'm so good and I can do so many things that they think they're being helpful. So it's good for you to just highlight for them, like, you're actually not helping the organization. You're wasting the organization's money. So sometimes that's another approach where you have to kind of do the hard love. Sometimes those people need to hear that instead. So a couple of different options for how to have those conversations that that can work. Not everybody responds to everything I just said. I'm just giving you sort of different arrows to choose from.
Hi, Shane. I did indeed begin a spreadsheet to look at the tasks that I do, and kind of assigned a dollar per hour value of, you know, if I were to delegate it. I also included a column of, you know, how much enjoyment does it bring? So kind of figured, well, there's some things I wouldn't mind hanging on to. And I did another column for the ultimate result. So I've actually delegated one already, and there are definitely other opportunities. So
it's awesome.
Useful exercise.
Good. And what did you learn about yourself when you did that?
Well, one thing is I think I learned there are opportunities for me to develop my trust of others to do a job, you know, to my satisfaction. And there may be opportunities to let go of a tendency to micromanage, and which kind of goes along with trust. So,
yep. And Micromanager is anonymous. That would be my advice. Is 90% is still an A. Remember that. And yes, I understand there are certain careers and professions and jobs and roles where 100% is the only option. You know, a pilot flying a plane. There are certain things that have to be done a certain way, right? But there are lots of things in organizations that just don't require everything be done perfectly to the highest level.
Yep. There are opportunities for me not to have everything be perfect. So there you go.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great. Awesome. Megan just dropped in the chat there. It's Stephen Covey. There are actually two different matrices that I use. One is called the urgent important, which is the one you just linked to. And then there's the easy impact. And actually, they bring different results because you're talking about different things. And so one is about time and the other is about amount of work required. And so often I will have people plot both and see and then compare what does that mean for us? And then you would do the sequence of events based on plotting both of those. And Stephanie writes here. Go ahead, Stephanie. Say you just want to.
Yeah. Speaking of like micromanaging and punching below weight class, I have a tendency to, when people come to me with issues, that I want to solve it and I want to get involved and I want to fix it. I mean, how do you navigate that where you want to be helpful, you want to facilitate, and at the same time, you can't get so involved in every little thing? And you can't promise to fix everything either, but that's just my initial, like, what I want to do.
That's the helper in you, right? The helper has the solution and all that. So one thing is to first understand that depending on how you're helping, you may not be helping, right? Like if you're just coming up with all the answers, that may not be helping. Yeah. You might have all the answers and they might be brilliant answers, but you might be creating a weakness the way that, you know, one eye is stronger than the other, that other eye gets weaker and weaker and weaker because that eye takes over. So, so the first thing I'd say is you want to ask kind of questions first. Like, yeah, you know exactly how to do what they're asking, but you just might ask the question, where would you start? How would you solve that? What questions might you ask? Who would you go to get answers to those questions? And let them generate. And then they might surprise you. They might come up with something like that. Great. Sounds good. Go for it. Or they might come really close and then you add a little something and then it adjusts and then they're off to the races. Right. So it's good to start from a place of question sometimes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's another way to kind of keep you out of the weeds. When somebody comes and goes, can you help with this? You're like, what do you need help with? Mm-hmm. I don't have time to do this. You go, okay, great. Well, let's talk about prioritization. What do you think is most important? What do you think is most urgent? You know, you can do that verbally or you can do the chart if you need to. But mm-hmm. you're just trying to get them at, or if they come and go, I don't know how to do this. I'm like, great. Well, if you didn't have anyone to talk to, where would you start? What would be your first instinct? Mm-hmm. I might start by doing this. And you go, okay, well, have you thought about this? I'm like, no, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, maybe consider that. So those are some other suggestions I have, which is you become... This is particularly true with people who have your personality, which is learn to be a kind of an evoker of their power to do their own thing rather mm-hmm. than do for them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Sarah, Megan, are we, did I answer your comments or questions to your satisfaction? Do you have more you want to talk about?
I'm good. Thank you.
Megan?
I am as well. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you for the chart, Megan.
That's also downloadable on my in my module as well. It's a video 9 of module 5. I have both the urgent important and the easy impact matrix. And I talk about in the video how to use both if you want to use both.
Awesome.
But they are different and they get you different results. Good. Who's up next? Ed, you did kind of talk briefly, but I know you had sent me an email as well. You do have a question. It sounds like you got a hard conversation you need to have. Why don't you walk us through what conversation you think is missing?
Sure. So we're a small business. We're about 15 employees. Three of them are what you might call my direct results of the front office. The rest are teachers. And two of my front office employees will work remotely on certain days. And, you know, when the pandemic hit, that's what we did. Everybody did for a while. But for family reasons, one has a small child and the other has an autistic autistic family member. At any rate, I'm happy to accommodate that. However, I have been concerned about the productivity sometimes when employees work remotely. And we use a CRM system in which all emails incoming and outgoing and conversations that you have are or should be logged in. So there is a viewpoint to that kind of activity that people do. That's not the sum total, but especially for the director, that's how I know as far as reaching existing clients or prospective clients, that's what's going on. And there were some times when I looked at the activity for a day in which she was remote, and I just like, you know, I'm not sure what was going on here. And I had something of a conversation about that with her. What came back was to me was a lot of defensiveness. You know, like you think that I'm not working, and you know, something like those words came out at one point. So for me personally, you know, I can't afford or it would make right life really challenging if I lost a key employee because, you know, they felt like they weren't appreciated. And I will also say in the past, I've gone around the maypole in terms of the issue of making sure people are appreciated. And I'm aware that there's room to grow for me. But at any rate, that is the issue is there have been instances where I just questioned how much work is getting done. By the way, it seems to be much better lately, but nonetheless.
Okay, so a couple of observations that I have, and I'm not sure I totally understand the role, so I may be off base a little bit, but I do want to just flag that in general, I believe it is a losing game for managers to try to track behavior of workers and time spent by workers. I think that is a losing game. I think that makes people feel they're under surveillance, and I think it's an incredible waste of time for managers. I believe that a far better use of your efforts and energy and time is to simply liberate people from how they do it and focus on outcomes. Did you deliver these outcomes to the business? And if you don't know whether they're delivering the outcomes to the business, that means that you have to find ways to create tracking for them to demonstrate that they've achieved outcomes. And I think generally, humans are more motivated by, first of all, tell me what the target is, and then I'm going to hit that target. And if I have to walk close to the target to hit it, or if I can hit it from 100 yards out, that's on me to figure out. And if I enjoy hitting it from 100 yards out, that's something I get to choose. And if I don't want to try to do that and I want to walk closer, then I should do that. So somebody who needs to work 80 hours a week to achieve that outcome and somebody who needs to work 20 hours a week to achieve that outcome, for you shouldn't matter, because the outcome drives business results either way. And it doesn't matter whether they worked tons of hours to get there or only a few hours to get there. It matters that they achieve the outcome. Now, not every role in an organization can be done that way. I realize that lots of organizations are different and something has to happen. But whenever and wherever possible, it is really useful for you to get clear on what outcome do I need from this role in order to drive either revenue, productivity, efficiency, accountability, anything that you need, right? The most obvious and easy one is a sales role. You know, that's super easy. That's commission-based. How many sales did you make? Are you hitting KPIs? It's a little bit harder to get KPIs on internal roles, but if it's customer service, there's all kinds of ways to track customer service, for example. Like, are you doing this? There are softwares you can buy that allow people to rate your customer service, for example. You should be hitting this rate of customer service, customer satisfaction. Are you hitting that? If the answer is no, let's coach you up. Let's talk about why maybe we're not doing that. So I'll pause there for just a minute and ask, does that clarify anything for you before we go on to the hard conversation?
It is. I mean, it's an eye opener that tracking activity is a losing game. I'm willing to accept that on face value. in this situation, with this particular employee, it is essentially a sales role. Sales and, you know, client interaction, client satisfaction of existing clients. We're not hitting our sales target. We used to. And so, you know, part of my job has been to investigate that and see what's missing. There could be external factors. For example, if there's an economic downturn, sometimes, not always actually, sales will go down. We're not hitting sales. Go ahead.
How does she do sales? Is she doing it on calls? Is she sending emails? Is she fielding inbound? What's the mechanism by which she's executing
sales? All of the above. So we will, you know, get a flow of leads from people who are interested in our service. The nature of our business is that, you know, we sell packages of hours, because maybe not unlike a coaching business or many businesses. So people will go through them and they'll run out, and then they'll renew, you know, or they complete their program. So that's another way that sales occur, as people renew. And incidentally, there's another person in our team who wants to move up from office manager to assistant manager. And we said, okay, you want to take over renewals, you know? And it's been a process to have her do that. And this is in the way that I would like, and frankly, my director. So, those are the ways that sales happen, you know, from existing clients or from leads that come in. And it's, yes, email. My coaching to her has been, from my own experience, is you really have to be making phone calls. You have to reach out to people. They're super busy. They'll ignore an email, and then, you know, the interest will fall off. You'll lose the prospective sales. So it's been a long, process of continuing to coach her to say, look, make more phone calls. But I mean, this is a little bit of digression from, the initial question of productivity, or my concern about productivity. And particularly when someone is remote.
So let me show you an example of one by what I'm suggesting you might consider building, a variation on this theme. So I have, I hire appointment setters in my business, right? So all of you came through a funnel, you had a, you know, you gave me your phone number, and I have all of that available. And I get 800 leads a month, let's say. Well, most of those I'm not calling, I don't have time to call them. So I hire somebody whose job is to make those calls and to begin initiating a sales conversation. So what I provide them is, first of all, a link to a software. It's a power dialer. It's a very inexpensive software. It's called Alloware. And all of those leads are automatically put into Alloware, and that person can simply, from their computer, dial out anybody they want. They can text message anybody. They have all kinds of techniques, right? So I give them a link to that. I give them an onboarding, and then I give them the what's called the setter scorecard KPI. How do I know whether you are in key performance indicators and whether or not you should stay on the team? And so within these KPIs, I have a very detailed outline of all of the outcomes. We expect this many things to come in. We expect this many close. We expect this is the closing ratio that we know is within KPI based on our industry. We know what you should then get compensated, and we know whether or not you're hitting the right targets. And if you're not, we need to coach you up. And so every one of those calls is recorded. So I get to go on and review and say, hey, let's have a call, some of your calls. Let's see what you're doing, what's working, what's not working. And I'm saying, you set your own schedule, you run and how you want, as long as you achieve this. Right. And so I have how compensation is structured. I have what I expect from you in terms of your competencies, your people skills. So what I'm doing is I'm laying out a very clear agreement for the mission of the organization, the role of the organization, how that role supports that mission, exactly what your objective is, and then the key outcomes. And then I provide them with a very specific set of resources. Here's the script I want you to use. Here's the video training on how to use the script. So if you need to go back and review that, here's a tracking sheet. I need you to input after you've made a certain number of calls and how many people you talked to and how many people booked an appointment. I need all of that information so that I can make data-driven decisions. And I make that very easy for you. So the tracking sheet I've built, and it summarizes the information. Your job is each day of the month, tell me how many calls you made, tell me how many offers you made, how many got booked, and then how many got closed. And now I have all of that rolls up into this document, and I can review that with them and say, hey, here's how you're doing, the objectives. So I realize for some of you on this call, this is inside baseball, but I want you to be thinking, all of you need to understand that when you're managing a business and a team, having really clearly articulated KPIs and agreements that are in writing so that they can reflect them and go, oh, you need this from me. And I'm happy to share these documents with you. I can create copies. So if you want to look at them and be like, I would start, you can start with my document and then you can adjust it to the needs of your business. So I'll just pause there. So I think that is probably more important as a starting point for whatever hard conversation you need to have. I think it's first asking the question, what is reasonable? What conversion rates over the year have you seen that you think are within KPI, within key indicators? And there's a percentage conversion at each step in a sales role. So does that make sense, Ed?
It does. It is tracking, but it is, and it's more granular than I have done. Although most of that information is available, you know, their reports, where I could. And I've done some cursory amount of checking. Okay, what is our close ratio, for example? No, I haven't gotten into how many calls you should have, or emails, and But what my takeaway is that, you know, manage to the outcome, not to, you know, a bunch of behaviors.
Yeah. And I would just say, as a general rule, that what is important for you to know is we live in an era of incredible access to an enormous amount of data, both qualitative and quantitative. We've never had this in the history of business at the level that we have it now, which means we can make data-driven decisions that are quite depersonalized. And so you really have two things you need to ask. One is, are they hitting KPI at every conversion in the funnel? Do you know what that conversion rate should be? Does she know what it should be? And so I know, for example, for an appointment setter using Alloware software, they will not be able to make more than 700 calls a month. I know that. If they're making 200 calls a month, they're not working enough. So if the ultimate goal is you need to have 15 sets a month on my calendar, and I know you're only setting six, then I have to figure out, well, is that because you're not converting at 12%? Because that's how many people, or are you not talking to enough people? Are you not making enough calls? Are you not double dialing? Like, at every step, I know exactly what they need to do in order to create that flow. And I know at which point in the funnel there's a leak, and then I can coach on that leak. Hey, it seems like, you know, we've agreed you're probably going to need to make at least 100 to 50 more calls a day. Is that something you're going to be able to do? Or are you feeling like, is there something going on in your life that's preventing that? Because I know you want to hit this goal, and I want to help you hit this goal. What do you think's standing in the way? Or it might be like, no, they're hitting all the calls, but they're not converting to sets. Are you talking to people that just aren't a good fit? Or how about I listen to some of the calls and I can just hear? And as I'm hearing, I go, gosh, yeah, you're taking too long. These people are super busy. We need to be efficient when we're talking to them. They don't have more than 5 minutes to talk to you. You're trying to take 20 minutes. They're getting irritated. They don't want to keep, you know, we need to tighten that up. So at every step of the journey, I have the ability, based on the dashboard gauge that I'm looking at, I have the ability to say, yep, you're on, or no, you're off, and here's why and how. So I think that's the other thing, is just starting to get smart about how you track KPIs. That'll help you have really good conversations.
Yeah, very good. I'm happy to look at that software, Alloware, it's called, is it?
Yeah, so there's a number of them, and different ones are really useful for different things, and they'll integrate with your existing CRM. Some of them integrate easily, some have native integration. Sometimes you have to hear. I recommend hiring an expert in integration so you don't have to do that. But you've got PhoneBurner, Alloware, Ring. Anyway, a couple of different softwares that are all useful, different price points. You know, you can decide. Anyway, I won't spend too much more time on that. But if you need specific access to resources or anything, email me and I'll send it back to you. Let's see here. I've got a couple of people who have been talking here. Sarah, you had mentioned wanting to maybe share your structure. I would love to see that if you're willing. And it looks like... Let me email the question.
Gene, my structure is a little higher level than yours. It's not, my people don't dial to make connections or close the sales. My people are setting face-to-face appointments with the CFOs. And so it's not quite as in-depth as yours. But I think that some of your tactics might be able to be utilized in what I'm doing as well. So.
Yeah, can you show me what you have? Are you willing to do that, or is that not a good use of time right now? Would you like to do that?
There isn't really a chart I've used. We just look for five contacts a week.
Okay, yeah, I mean, so that's lower scale. It's higher, higher. So you probably don't need quite the scalable tracking that I do, because I am doing larger numbers at lower depth. And it's for you.
I'm sorry, Shane, did you ask a question?
Yeah, is the method you're using, is it working for you? Are you feeling like you're getting good information and data?
You know, when there's buy-in and relationship managers are definitely sticking to that, yes, it absolutely works. And where there's not buy-in, it's not working, so.
Okay, and so one of the reasons that I recommend you actually create real charts and have people, and like a Google Sheet is really easy to share and have people, you know, require them to input their data, is you get to start to see trends, but you also get something that's outside of themselves. So it's a little personalizing. So you go, hey, it looks like you made, sorry, say it again.
I would imagine it's eye-opening even for them to see.
For sure. Yeah. And you can decide whether you want to create sheets that they are allowed to compare themselves to others, or whether you want to hide sheets so that they can only see their own performance. And then you have a tab that everything rolls up to that so that you get to see the summary aggregate of performance month to month. And you get to see what KPIs are, stuff in big picture. And then you can punch down into each individual and you can say like, okay, looks like, you know, if the goal, if the KPI is we need at the end, 5 calls a week, you're still going to have to reverse engineer how many outreaches they need to do, how many LinkedIn connections they got to create, whatever the metric is, that's that initial thing, you need to know how many of those there are. And then you need to know the conversion rate at each step. So how many calls got scheduled, then how many people actually showed up to those conversations, not calls, but appointments, how many people canceled, and how many people were not a good fit, were not qualified even after the meeting. And then how many offers were made, and then people accepted the offer, whatever the thing is. Right. So I think just in terms of sales processing, that's a really critical best practice, is to have dashboards with data so that people can see. And then you got to decide whether it's good for them. Sometimes it's not good for them to compete. And sometimes it's really good for them to compete. Sometimes it's super motivating.
Appreciate it.
Good. Okay. We have other questions in here. Linda, you emailed a question. I do want to come back to that. There's a few others. John Mark, yes, you can get access. Will you send me an email? Anybody who wants me to send you this version of what I use, I'll happily email it to you or share it with you. And then Linda, let me go to you. Linda, why don't you just share the question? You see it here. Why don't you share it so that the group can hear and understand you?
Hi. My question is, I received a text message from a client. I'm a real estate agent. Hi, Linda. Should I list my acreage before or after the May long weekend? And I was out doing country showings where I had no cell service. So, of course, I didn't answer her texts until later that evening when I got home. So then she sent me a text at 7:36 p.m. because I hadn't responded, and said, okay, sorry to bother you. Obviously, you're not interested. Thanks. Take care. So at 8:46 p.m., I sent her this message, but I didn't set any boundaries with her. I said, hello, April. I'm sorry I didn't get back to you sooner. I was out of service for most of the day. I was out showing country properties. I left early this morning and just got home. And yes, I would suggest listing before the long weekend if possible, as there are many people from out of province that would like to come for viewings on long weekends, as it gives them an extra day. However, I didn't set boundaries with her. She's very impatient, I guess you would say, and demands an answer now.
Yeah. First of all, I think you handled that as well as you can. And it sounds like a difficult person who's a little bit entitled, you know, when they're being snide like that, that's an unpleasant client to work with. But I do think it's okay for you, you know, to set some boundaries, but I'd probably do that in a voice to voice, not over a text. And the way I might suggest that is you just say, you could put it in writing for sure, but I would do it in a conversation. So, and you just do it from the place of, hey, I just want to set clear expectations about how we can work together and what you can expect of me. You can expect that I will get back to you with your questions within 24 hours. I can't guarantee a 90-minute response time. And you can get back to me between these hours. These are the hours I tend to work, so I'll be glad to respond to you between those hours. And so set whatever boundary conditions you want, put them in writing. You can talk to her and then send her a follow-up email so she can see it in writing somewhere. That'd be my suggestion.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Who else has questions, wants to interact? Let's see here. JD, you had asked about, looks like a number of you have questions about tracking and all that kind of stuff. It's just an essential part of this kind of work. And Stephanie, I'm sure you have probably even more elaborate methods by which you're tracking everything that goes on. Stephanie's in digital marketing, and digital marketing is notorious for, which is what I do too, by the way. It's notorious for needing to be incredibly data intensive in order for you to optimize every dollar that's spent.
Yes. I'll use the next 7 minutes if nobody else wants airtime, but
let me just check in and see if anybody else needs to talk about anything else. Yes. If I don't hear anything, then I'll let you speak some wisdom around conversion tracking and optimizing, because I think a number of people here would benefit. Where you find module board management and negotiating with managers? Yes. Sorry, Sarah had sent here a message. I just wanted to address that. Yes, we should discuss on this call a little bit. It's a good use of time, I think, but I want to make sure I'm clear. So you're saying, how do you manage up? And then I don't understand negotiating with managers. Is that down or across?
Upward as well. Yeah, I've been given a retention bonus, in the long run, it looks like the level of work is as high as I'm currently experiencing, if not higher, and it's not sustainable for me. And so I need to figure out how to manage up and get them to recognize that same thing.
Oh, awesome. Great. So bonus 5 is all about managing up and across. I highly recommend you watch that. But I think we should workshop just a little bit now, and then we can follow up again. But the most important principles for managing, which I think you're going to be really natural at, the most important principle is to divest yourself of outcomes and present choices and options with some consequences as you see them, and presenting them as all valid. So one of the things that happens sometimes when we manage up is we, and I'm not saying you're this way, but it can often happen where we feel like the boss is making a terrible decision. It's going to affect my life really negatively. And I need to convince them to do X. And so we come in with the, like, that's a bad idea. We shouldn't do that. And here's why. And here's the 30 reasons why that direction is not going to work. And I really want you to reconsider that, all that kind of stuff. That is the best way to shut a manager, a person with power over you down. The best way to approach them is to go, hey, sounds like you want to do X. If you're up for a conversation, I'd like to explore Y also. Is that something you'd be willing to do? Yeah, okay, great. Here, I think the benefits of doing X, and here are the costs associated with doing X. Y has these benefits and these costs associated with it. I tend to prefer and recommend Y. Either way is fine. I'll execute whatever you need me to execute. Now, if they go, yeah, thanks for Y, I'm going with X. And you know that if they go with X, no longer a fit for the business. Then you go, great, X it is. Okay, hey, need to have another follow-up conversation with you. Totally valid. You chose X, no problem. I want you to be aware that long-term, that isn't going to work for me. And I didn't want to influence your decision because I think you needed to do what's right first and foremost. But I also know if I were in your shoes, I want you to know the impact. The other impact is over the long term, I won't be able to sustain this. And so you probably need to find a different person for the role. And I'm happy to stick around for, you know, a certain length of time, but this isn't going to work for me long term. What you've done is you've respected their authority. You've respected they have line of sight on all kinds of things and trade-offs that you don't have. And you've respected the fact that you may not be the best talent and that they may be kind of going, yeah, I'm okay with losing you. Which is great, because then you know this person is not going to be a fit for you either. But the sequencing of that event is really helpful, and the de-escalation of any kind of attachments is also super helpful, because you're saying, I'm joining you on your side of the table to look agnostically and what's best for the business, regardless of the impact on me personally. That's not relevant for this conversation. It'll be relevant later, but not in this conversation. And so then you have the next conversation, which is, hey, now it's relevant. This is impacting me personally, and here are the consequences. I'm okay with that. I want to make sure you're okay with that. And they might go, whoa, hold on. I didn't know that was one of the outcomes. You're like, yeah, well, that is one of the outcomes. And I didn't share it because I'm sure you had maximum opportunity to make whatever you thought was the best choice. But if you think that that's a really material consequence, you need to know it is there. It is one of the consequences. Then they go, oh, okay. Hold on. Let me rethink it. I think maybe it's more this, not that. Thank you for telling me. I didn't realize that. And so it puts them in the position of pursuing you and asking you to stay rather than you trying to convince them to do something. So I'll just pause. This is true for everybody who ever has to manage up. That's a way to do that. And Stephanie, I believe we had this very conversation when you were negotiating. And maybe you can speak to your own experience, because Stephanie also, before she enrolled in the program as part of her onboarding, it was technically a sales call, we strategized about how she could ask for a really big raise and get access to the program that I was selling her effectively, and how to go about doing that. And she got everything she asked for. I don't know to what extent that was my coaching or what we talked about. So you can speak to that. I'm not trying to say that it was me. I'm just saying you might want to comment on that too. But first, Sarah, is that helpful?
It is helpful. I'll have to spend some time, kind of restructuring what you're suggesting there, because they've already put an offer letter in front of me and expected me to sign it for a 2-year retention, which it was great to say, they want me to stick around through 2 years as we go through this merge. But it was prior to me knowing how they expect this to come together. And so now that I have more insight as to what the expectations are, I'm not committed because I signed the letter. It just says, if you stick around for 2 years, here's what you get. But I'll have to kind of apply what you just shared with me and see if I can make it fit into the situation I'm sitting in right now.
Okay, so in a more specific, thank you for sharing that. So the first thing I would say is you can simply say to them, hey, I really appreciate this. I'm flattered you want me to stick around. The current workload structure, what you've laid out here, isn't a fit for me long-term, so I can't commit 2 years with you. If you'd like a 2-year commitment from me, here's what I'd require, and I'm okay either way. So if you'd like me to stick around, I can do that, but these are my terms. I totally respect if that's not something that's workable for you. And otherwise, I'm happy to keep putting my shoulder into the problems, but obviously I'm not gonna be able to commit to you for 2 years.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that's a pretty simple, clean conversation in my mind. Do you think of any reason why what I just said doesn't work?
Because there's some ambiguity about exactly how things are going to turn out in the merge, right? When you have a merge of this size, you have to acknowledge that there will be people who just choose to walk out the door, as you're sharing with me. That's a choice for me to make, right? There will be entire teams that say, nope, this new world is not for me. And entire teams will walk out the door. And so the position I'm in is that here in the state of Washington, I will be the one team who knows all the systems and all the structure and all the processes, and did not learn until after the letter had been given to me that is part of what my job will include going forward, is to train all of the people on the other side of the merge, how then to, we're basically going to be their teachers while still also having to do our own jobs and our own production and our own, take care of our own clients. It is more of an astronomical task to take on than I think they recognize at this point. And so.
Perfect. So yeah. First thing I'll say, congratulations, you're in the driver's seat. Like they desperately need you. And that's awesome. And by the way, that was Stephanie's situation too. She was in the driver's seat, and so she could come in and ask for the moon. And you benefit from going out and getting an external offer and bringing that to the table too, which is one of the things Stephanie had already done. I didn't tell her to do that. She'd already done it. where you get your market rate and you figure out, yeah, it's even going to work. That's one possibility. The biggest thing you can do is you can walk in and say, here are the terms for me. You can say it from a positive place that says, look, I believe in this. I want to support you guys, whether you do or not. You just want to say that. It's important. Like, I'm here. I want to support you. But you want me to translate institutional knowledge, which seems to me to be one of the most important things, then I'm going to require two more hires that I can lead and manage in order for me to go off and impact the business the way you guys are going to do. That is a full-time job that you have hired me for. And I'm interested in doing it and willing to do it. Or you would say, what you are asking me to do is this job, and therefore I really won't be able to fulfill this responsibility. And candidly, that job doesn't interest me very much. So I'm not sure I'm the right fit for what you're asking for. So given that, let's talk about what role does interest me and what would work for me. But the great news for you is you're able to design almost anything you want, and the chances of them saying no are extremely low. So you should feel super empowered to ask for a lot and expect a lot and not be worried if it doesn't work, because you're highly employable in all kinds of other places. And so, yeah, Stephanie's point, they need you a lot more than you need them. And that's what's clearly been laid out here based on what you just said. Very rarely are you getting a, I need you to stick around for 2 years, if they're like, you're an average player. You know, you're clearly a keystone player. You're clearly a high octane leader. Do not sell yourself short. I would push for something significant and that works for you and makes you happy.
Okay, thank you.
Does that feel true?
It feels true. I mean, the 2 years was a shock to me even, right? But I was like, what? Who has ever heard of that?
I'm so excited when you told me that, because they just overplayed their hand in a negotiation, and you basically have all the power now.
Yeah.
I
just need to spend some time thinking about what all I need to go back with. And that's
absolutely
takes time, right?
Absolutely. And that's the other great thing you have, is you have time. You can be like, yeah, I'll get back to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Get them on pins and needles, get them anxious, go ahead and then start dreaming, start thinking about really a great role that you would just love, and or compensation that you would just love, or both, you know?
Okay.
You're in a great spot. Congratulations. That's a big achievement. You're obviously really good at what you do. So super amazing.
Thank you. I think I took up all the rest of the time, though. I feel bad.
You don't need to feel bad. This is why you're on these calls.
Don't feel bad, and, sir. That was one of the things I wanted to ask about in the last few minutes. So you asked for me. Thank you.
Okay.
You wanted to ask for you, Stephanie?
I did. I still continue to struggle with managing up and getting people on board and kind of like, come on, everybody. To the point where sometimes it feels like, okay, who's leading this thing here? Yeah.
So for sure, watch bonus five. Bonus five, both of you, just begin to calibrate. I mean, Sarah, we've already kind of done what you need, so that's fine. Yeah. But for you, for sure, Stephanie, keep reviewing that material and get it in your bones, and then come back to me with a really specific example. And and I'll design the way that conversation goes.
Okay. Sound Sarah, good? The two things I remembered, yes, if it's okay for me to share briefly, please. I know we're over time here. The two things that helped me remember from Shane's advice and going into those scenarios is, it's really easy to get attached to the outcome because you want it so badly and you're personally invested, and maybe your identity is also kind of intertwined with what that outcome looks like. That's my problem, is to, one, remain detached from that outcome, and two, remain, it's just a business decision at the end of the day. It's simply a decision that two parties need to make, one being the business, the other being you. And then two, staying super rooted in your value and recognizing your power and recognizing that they need you more than you need them, because there's plenty of opportunities out there from other companies as well as from what you're able to produce on your own. So just remembering to, they're not going to set your value, even if they lowball you, even if whoever these humans are on the other side, they cannot dictate what you bring to the table. You dictate what you bring to the table, and you decide whether, you know, you're going to allow them to set your value at whatever level they're willing to set it.
And thank you for that, Stephanie. You're absolutely right. Sarah, the other thing that really might be useful for you is to go out and, like, say, I'll decide in a month. I have too much stuff going on. I need to revisit this, and go out and interview somewhere else. And just find out what your market value is. Find out what kind of roles are there. Find out how much they pay you. You might be like, oh my gosh, I'm so underpaid. You know, or wow, these roles are so much more fun. Like, that's exactly what happened to Stephanie. And that's the thing that boosted her to come in and literally say, like, I've got an offer for $60,000 more than you're currently paying me. That's, you know, or whatever the amount is, but significantly more money. I didn't mean to reveal that, Stephanie. I'm sorry. I don't even know if that was right. But my point is, you'll go out and you'll get, like, significantly more is my guess. And then you can come back and use that as evidence to say, you need to know what I'm capable of getting elsewhere.
I am in conversations with another institution. I just have not taken it to that depth yet to even share with them. I'm interested what their structure might look like. But so that's not far from the table where I could be doing that within a couple of weeks.
Do it. Yeah. Move on that. And push for it, and drive that price up, and then come back to your existing and or leave because you realize it's just a way better job, you know. So I'm loving what I'm seeing. I'm super excited for you, and you're doing great work. So congrats.
Okay, again, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Stephanie, we should talk. Sounds like we're in the same pod here.
If you're in San Diego, let's go grab a drink.
That's right. Yeah, feel free to connect with each other. I think you guys can connect on the Facebook group, or you can drop
your emails in the chat.
There's other ways to connect too. So if anybody wants to connect with each other, that's that. But remember to email me, any of you who need me to send you access to things, and specifically what you're wanting me to send you. And then we'll go from there. Okay, everybody. Awesome call. Really enjoyed it. Any other comments or questions before we go?
Thank you. Thank you for your coaching today.
You're welcome. Thanks for being on.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Oh, here we go. Ed. Okay, great. I'll see what I can do here for you, Ed. It would help me if you send an email, because this chat will vanish the moment I close out.
So. Right. Sure. I'll do that. That makes more sense. All right. Thanks for the call. Great information.
Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.